Hello and welcome to Resource Report, where we share with you important information about local nonprofits and resource organizations that support the community we share, produced by Pathways to Agency.
I am your host, Rainmaker. Today's guest is Christine Kamenzind, Executive Director of Hope Alliance in Centralia. Here's Chris. I am here with Christine Kamenzind at Hope Alliance in downtown Centralia. How are you doing, Christine?
I'm really well. How are you?
I'm quite well. So can you introduce yourself, your position, and how did you come to be here at Hope Alliance?
So my name is Chris Kamenzind. I'm the Executive Director of Hope Alliance, and I've been at Hope Alliance as the director for over 7 years. I previously worked at a domestic violence sexual assault agency in Pacific County for 16 years. I started as a volunteer in 1999, and in the following year, I became a domestic violence sexual assault advocate for 8 years. And then after being an advocate, I became the executive director at Crisis Support Network. And after spending many years there, I hit a wall and burnt out and quit the job, and I became a flight attendant for a couple of years. And then knowing that this anti-violence movement work is in my blood, I knew I was going to get back into the DV movement at some point, and this job opened up and I landed here.
Well, you've been here a minute, quite a while, so it's obviously very fulfilling for you.
Yes, you could say that. There are good days and bad days.
And that's what makes it an adventure.
Yes, it's when my staff get frustrated, I always say, it's just remember you're not working in a cubicle and having the same thing happen day after day, because every day is different.
Every day is a different day.
Every day, yes, absolutely. The day-to-day struggles.
Yeah. What is Hope Alliance do?
So Hope Alliance is Lewis County's accredited domestic violence and sexual assault agency. We are 24/7. We operate a domestic violence shelter. We provide legal, medical systems advocacy. At times we have support group. We respond to the hospitals for sexual assault calls and for strangulation. We're at court on Mondays with clients seeking the legal system for protection orders. And we are very survivor-centered focus. Like if we have somebody that comes in and has an idea of they want to move somewhere else, we talk about the pros and cons and come up with options to help support their decision.
So what about your programs?
What programs do we have? We have the domestic violence, sexual assault. Up until recently, we had a HUD housing grant that ended.
Oh.
That was $200,000 a year. We have consolidated housing grant, which is kind of on hold right now. We have a STOP grant, which is a grant meant to have partners that work with victims of domestic violence, such as law enforcement, prosecution, to collaborate and best serve victims of domestic violence or sexual assault. We have a legal advocacy contract. That's it.
That's it? Mm-hmm. That's pretty comprehensive, but I know that there's a lot more to it than just that. What are the specific criteria for people coming to you? Like, do you just see anybody that's coming in with domestic violence or sexual assault, or are there certain demographics or parameters?
No, there are no restrictions. However, when I first started, staff was told to believe anybody that comes to their door, believe what they tell you. That was taken to an extreme because perpetrators were coming in posing as victims of domestic violence, using it as a manipulative tactic. And so now we ask questions, trying to screen people in instead of out. And our our clientele is predominantly women. We do serve men, but the majority of victims of domestic violence have been proven to be women and children. It can be domestic violence that is happening currently, where they're currently living in a situation with domestic violence. They may have just fled. They might be coming in from another state or another county. It could be somebody who has some PTSD of having domestic violence or sexual assault in years past that need to talk to somebody. And so we don't really have any, we won't serve you unless we screen you as a perpetrator, then we don't serve them.
That's fair.
Yes.
Yeah. We got around, it was an easy place.
And yeah.
Now you've got to.
Yes.
You've got to, like, you know, raise the bar a little bit. Okay, that makes sense. And then what kind of legal help do y'all offer?
So we used to, up until a couple of months ago, have a legal clinic with volunteer attorneys out of Thurston County Volunteer Legal Aid. And they used to come to our office 2 times a month. There were 3 to 4 attorneys who would see our clients. We'd screen them in, and they were ongoing clients of ours that were needing some assistance for some free legal advice. That grant ended about 6 weeks ago. So we have a couple of the prior staff that are still interested in volunteering. So we're working on hopefully creating some continuance of that program, because that was the best program I've ever worked with in my 20-some years of experience, having these attorneys here filling out the paperwork, telling them what their options were, because we cannot give legal advice. So we're hoping to get something picked back up for legal aid, but as of right now, we don't have anything. But we can help with protection orders.
What would it take for you to get that assistance back?
Well, we were one of 3 partners, Turning Point in Mason County and Safe Place in Thurston County. We were the recipients of this program, and the grant was not renewed on the state level. And so to get it back in full force like it was, we would have to apply for the grant all over again. I know that time has passed, but maybe in the upcoming year.
So what happened with that anyway? Because I've interviewed Safe Place, actually, and they are still having their legal help. So was there something because of the counties, or what happened?
No, I don't think it was anything with the counties. It might be somewhat of a similar program that they're using. But probably not the
same
grant. But a lot of the attorneys that came to our office to provide assistance were from Thurston County. So
okay,
they might have just continued in a different direction, but kind of on the same path.
Okay. I think that's helpful to understand for people. Yeah. What about your emergency shelter?
So our emergency shelter is independent living. We're a little unique in the way we don't have a staff at shelter. We have staff that check in on the shelter. When I started at this program, we had 3 advocates at the shelter every day, all day. It was like, these women do not need to be babysat. They just need a safe place to stay. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there are some barriers that make it difficult for women to live on their own. Like, they may not have ever had to cook, or they need help understanding nutrition for their children. We just don't microwave dinners. So we encompass all facets of well-being with our residents and shelter on a case-by-case basis. But for the most part, our shelter residents do a really great job. We help them get hooked into benefits that are needed. We look after their legal needs. We help them try to find housing that's affordable and sustainable. Up until last year, we had an 89% success rate of of getting women out of our shelter into affordable and sustainable housing. So we're really good at that. And then the housing market, the availability took a difficult turn, and the prices increased greatly.
Yeah.
It's a contract through DSHS, and we have 6 separate bedrooms where people can lock their door, keep their things safe in the bedroom, and then there's communal living room, kitchen, bathrooms.
Okay. And what is the safety on the site?
We've never had an issue.
Not an issue. Well, that's
right. And I think the neighbors know that we are, that it's a shelter. And we've had a couple times where the neighbors have called with voicing their concerns about maybe something happening up at the shelter. And we're quick to respond. If something is going on up at the shelter, we have staff that live very close by that respond promptly to assess what's happening.
That's good. Neighbors helping neighbors. That's what it's about. Yeah. Yeah. How big is the shelter facility? Like how many spaces?
There are 6 bedrooms. I can sleep 15 individuals.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So is it like a room with like bunks or?
One room has a double and a couple twins for a mom and maybe a couple of kids. And then we have a bigger room that's for a bigger family. We have just a couple of single rooms where it's just maybe a mom or a woman and perhaps maybe a small child where we can bring in a little mattress for the child or a crib type.
Mm-hmm.
That's
is it like a communal kitchen?
Communal kitchen, communal bathrooms, and communal living room and family room.
Okay, so you have your...
It's a beautiful place. Yep. And it's really fun to watch some of the women that go in there that leave best friends, and they come back to our office, and, you know, you can see the bond that they've created over time, and they've continued to be friends and support each other, so... It's a nice thing. But on the flip side, we also have, you know, sometimes not everybody gets along so well. And so we always have to remind people, you know, we're all here for the same reason, and you need to worry about you and
mm-hmm.
not what your neighbor's doing.
What if they have a pet? Do y'all let them come in with their dog or their cat?
So currently we allow service animals.
Okay.
We do not allow family pets. And again, it's all case by case.
I mean, there may be a case where this person has like a dog that will protect that woman with their life. You do not want to part the person from the dog.
Right. But we also have to be worried about other residents. So what we typically do is ask, is there somebody that the pet can stay with?
Yeah.
And we'll get you reunited.
Okay. Now, I know the majority of your clients are women, but what do you do if you have a male client and that needs shelter? Do you have a separate space or?
We do not. Okay. We refer them to a shelter that I can't say where. That's for men, and on occasion we put them in a hotel.
Okay, that's really good that you have that accommodation. My heart goes out to these men because there's such a stigma, you know.
Oh yeah,
and that can make it really difficult for men to receive help as well.
Correct. Yes, I agree with you.
Yeah. So what about how do you handle safety planning?
So it's individualized. We cover the basics of, you know, be aware of your surroundings. Don't take the same route home that you always do. It's really on a case-by-case basis. And some of the cases are a lot more extreme than other cases. So it just depends on the situation and... Whose safety are we worried about? Are there children involved, or Is your mother close by? Because, you know, if an abuser can't get to his partner that he's harassing or hurting, the next place he usually goes is to the mother.
Mm-hmm.
So it might entail doing safety planning with people outside, I mean, in her circle,
mm-hmm.
As well as for her and her children. And it might be safety planning individually with each child. We don't do it obviously with little children, but if you're going to high school and you drive a car and maybe your dad or your stepdad, you know, it's all just very individualized, case by case.
And that's an illustration of how there's a difference with how you take anyone versus safe place, because of their funding, there's a strict line. It can only be partners. It can't be like family members.
Oh, intimate partner. Yeah. Ours is intimate partner as well.
Yeah.
A shelter.
Y'all are pretty much, if you're being sexually harassed or assaulted, or someone's being domestically violent with you, it doesn't matter who it is. Mm-hmm. You're able to help them.
Yes.
That's an important distinction.
They don't get the first priority though. Intimate partner violence is our first priority, but
okay.
If somebody comes to us and has a safety issue and needs to ask questions about their safety, and we have the ability to help them, of course, we'll help them.
That's good to know. What about your support groups?
So we do have a Spanish-speaking support group right now. We've had a difficult time getting support group going again after COVID, especially because everybody knows everybody. So sometimes it makes it really awkward for...
It's difficult to be totally confidential.
Yeah.
People will talk.
Right. Or you might be neighbors, or your brother's ex-girlfriend might be in the group. So it's you know, the confidentiality is sometimes a deal breaker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're not remote, they're in person?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They were in person. Right now, our funding's been cut greatly, so that's probably something that we won't be pursuing in the near future, mm-hmm. this fiscal year.
I want to jump over to that for a minute, actually, since you mentioned your funding being cut. There was an article that I came across in the Chronicle, I think, about how it was looking like y'all were going to be closing in October. But how are you doing with that now?
Not very well right at the moment. We've lost over half of our budget compared to last year. So our budget... is currently at $550,000 to operate 24/7 while maintaining the office and our shelter. So it's just really not sustainable. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're kind of playing around with numbers and trying to see how, if we can maybe move some of the requirements from our contracts. Like maybe we don't have to be 24/7. But right now we're in the most, I'm always very optimistic person. This is the first time I feel the doom and gloom of, so in fiscal year 23-24, we had $1.2 million. Last year, our annual budget was $1,050,000, and currently it's at $585,000. So a lot of the funding that we've lost is... funding that we use to help client needs. Might be first and last month's rent for an apartment. It might be helping her buy a couple of new tires because she can't get to work, and she can't get to work, she can't pay for daycare. You know, just the cycle that might be having somebody install some cameras. So we're unable to do any of that right now until we get a further grasp on where we're really at financially.
Are you planning any fundraising events at all coming up?
So there's a big this is a big topic in our community. At the end of, I want to say it was in April last year, we typically have Walk a Mile in Their Shoes fundraiser and a golf tournament. Mm-hmm. And we decided at that time not to have fundraisers because we don't bring enough money in from those fundraisers that it would keep us going. I think we...
It would cost too much, just run the event.
Yes. So like for the golf tournament, net we made like $12,000, $15,000. That's not going to help us get through the next month. It would be if we were fully funded. That would be very helpful. But we had a really hard time going out into our community asking for sponsors and asking for donations when we didn't even know if we were going to be open. It just seemed wrong for us to go out and ask for funding when we didn't know whether or not we were going to be open. So we stated at that time that next year, if we're still afloat, we'll have the golf tournament and the walk a mile. At this present moment, I don't know that we will. I don't know quite yet where we're at, and the board is still looking over different options. So they'll probably have a greater understanding of what's in store for Hope Alliance in Lewis County in the next few weeks, I would imagine. Yeah. Now, I did have a call today, though, from the Lewis County AAUW women have been fantastic. So Lewis County is the American Association of University Women, and they are very proactive in Lewis County and in helping Hope Alliance. So I had a call from one of their members today asking if we were still taking like card donations or monetary donations. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like we use those smaller pots donations for like gas cards. People who are having to drive over from East Lewis County to here, it's over a 2-hour drive point away. So that type of donation or people mailing in $100 checks, we are very frugal with that funding, and we like to put gas cards or Safeway or Walmart cards so that they can buy what is deemed needed. This is also a very awkward time of year to not have funding because we know school supplies are a big issue for some of the families that we're helping. So right now we're not really doing a lot other than advocating for our clients. We are unable to financially give them a hand up. But private donations for smaller, great chunks of money would be greatly appreciated. And it goes directly to our clients. It doesn't go into any of our operations at all.
That's good to know. There's also, I recently came across another article in the Chronicle, how there are a couple of Lewis County commissioners who are seeking to reduce the funding towards homeless individuals. Would that indeed affect you?
Yes. So typically over the last several years, we've received a grant from Lewis County, the Consolidated Housing Grant. I want to say it's a 2-year grant, about $88,000 a year. And most of that money goes towards rental assistance, eviction prevention, which was great. Then in the middle of June, I believe, I received a contract from the county for $244,000 for CHG funding. I was like, $244,000 for 1 year. It's like, oh my God, this is a godsend. This is going to help tie us over so that we can keep in operation. They rescinded the contract. They hadn't signed the contract. Then they sent the contract back again. Again, it was $244,000 for 1 year. They said, no, we're taking the offer back because Lewis County has the option of receiving more CHG funding through the Department of Commerce at the state level. And from what I understand, a couple of the commissioners are not wanting to put more money into homelessness because they think it attracts people to Lewis County.
That's incredibly wrong. That's very not true. That's not how that works.
I agree.
And a lot of the people that we help are homeless for fleeing domestic violence and coming to our agency. But we also have a high population of people that are homeless that are from this area. People are not coming here seeking services because other areas have more services than what Lewis County has. But it just also happens that we're on the I-5 corridor. So right now, I'm hoping that the commissioners will approve the CHG funding because it also affects Salvation Army and Housing Resource Center.
Yeah.
And I think the funding that our agencies have received have made a huge difference in the money that we're receiving is preventing homelessness. So not receiving the money is going to put more people out on the street. And for me, it just seems like the wrong thing to do. It seems inhumane and lack of compassion because we're all not too far from being homeless ourselves. Like one paycheck, one disaster.
We need some advocates to come speak up and
come
teach the commissioner some facts. That's what we need.
Like if I have extra money or extra food, I'm more than happy to give it to somebody in need. You know, I don't need everything. I don't need the best of everything.
We're all in this together.
So we're kind of waiting. We're on a wait and hold with the commissioners. I don't know that they're going to accept the additional funding or, but I do know that if we get the $88,000 a year, that's probably not going to help tie us over with all of the other cuts that we've had. Once we got that $244,000 contract for a year, I was like, yes, thank you. Because it really showed, I know that we have some really good allies in Lewis County government. I know that a lot of people want us to succeed and to keep doing what we're doing. And that to me was like an olive branch of like, here, we recognize you're facing severe budget cuts, hoping this ties you over. And then for it to be gone again was just pretty gut-wrenching. It's gut-wrenching. Yeah. Not right now, we don't have any funding to help our women in shelter secure housing, which is the first time ever. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So when you're helping your sexual assault victims, I know sometimes victims will end up in the hospital for medical care. And do you meet them there?
Or
you do?
We do.
Can you explain about that?
Yeah, so typically what happens is the hospital will call us and say, we have a sexual assault victim, and we go to the hospital. The advocate on call or the advocate who's available during the day go in and introduce ourselves and explain what we do. And we give the option. We don't have to be here if you don't want us here. We don't have to be in the room with you. It's very survivor-led. Some victims want us to stay in the room with them during the sexual assault exam. Others don't. We talk about the legal. We go legal, safety planning. Sometimes they don't have a place to go to, so we make arrangements to take them somewhere else or, you know, make sure they just don't end up on the street. And then we usually wait a day or two, depending on the case. Again, it's case specific, of reaching out to them and checking in on them. And then we go to law enforcement and prosecution interviews. Because it's a law that a victim can have an advocate present with them. And
it can be very emotionally triggering to be dealing with the police when you're in a situation like that.
Yes, especially if they don't really understand what it's like to be sexually assaulted. And then the case moves forward. We're with the victim throughout the whole trial. But more than that, we try to provide a support for going back to work, maybe going back to where it happened, or, you know, facing the trauma. And we also provide advocacy for the secondary trauma. So if there are kids involved whose mom has been raped, or parents, we provide secondary advocacy for them as well. Explain to them what might be going through the mind of the victim, and how to approach it, and how to respond and react to what they can do to support their loved one.
That's really helpful. Yeah, when you were talking just now about supporting victims for returning to work, how do you do that? Is that like, you know, having someone come with you to work?
Well, there have been a couple of instances where the victim was really not ready to go back to work, and there are some laws that can protect a victim from going back to work. And so usually if we have a conversation with their employer, or without disclosing exactly what happened, that helps. It's just having somebody that is not them, helping them finagle the red tape of maintaining and keeping a job.
An outside perspective, a non-biased kind of view, can, unfortunately, that this is the case, but it does help with validity.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There's one specific place in Lewis County where we've helped a few women who've been assaulted, not at the workplace, but in private life afterward. And the one I remember is sending a letter she'd asked me to write a letter to the supervisor explaining the barriers of going back full time. And so I had contact with the supervisor, and then following two other clients who had been sexually assaulted had reported back that their supervisors were very understanding. So it just took that one time for the supervisor to understand some of the barriers and obstacles that women have of going back to work, or men. I mean, we definitely have helped male rape victims.
That's comforting. That's very comforting to know that. And then digital safety.
Mm.
Explain your digital safety. What is that?
So we have a digital safety expert in the office about how to know if you're being tracked. Mm. But there are lots of different ways to be tracked than when I first started in this work. Trackers on cars, on your cell phone, email. So advocates are very well trained by this other advocate about technology and safety. That's about all I have on that.
So there's a lot of really tricky little things to navigate with all of that. And you just don't even know how they're finding you.
Right.
Gmail.
Or impersonating to be somebody else.
Yeah, and then with the AI now, they can they can steal your voice.
Yes.
And pretend to be you.
Or put your face on pictures that are on bodies that aren't you.
There's a lot of scary stuff.
There's very scary stuff.
Mm.
I think it's a very frightening time to be a child.
Yeah. And then, so y'all have different resources on your website as well, different agencies listed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to pride ourselves on that we're a community player and are happy to collaborate with other agencies. Some relations have flourished and others take a little more work, but I mean,
keep going.
Yeah, but I mean, we always go what is it called? Full faith that they're going to want to help. And, you know, it goes back to, like, I think most people aren't good. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't know what to do until you ask them.
And y'all work with the Gather Church.
Yes, we love Gather.
Yeah.
Good people.
Yeah.
Cole and Patty and all of their different offers that they do to help individuals is really, they are good people.
I'm working on getting an interview with them as well.
Oh, you are?
I am. What other organizations do you work with?
We work with Salvation Army, Parents as Teachers, Housing Resource Center. One thing I forgot to mention is we have an advocate in the CSO.
What's the CSO?
The Community Service Office. So if somebody's applying for TANF and they say that they are experiencing domestic violence, they're hooked up with an advocate, and the advocate can kind of tap the brakes on some of the state requirements of having to go out and look for a job right away. Like, we may need to focus on other safety issues before we send you out into the workplace trying to find a job. So we have a good relationship with our local CSO office. And we have a lot of churches around here too that are always willing to step up and help with different options, meeting places, donations. You know, I would say that there's a lot of great people in Lewis County.
What is your process for helping someone? I would imagine it's individualized, but is there an intake form, or how do you screen them? Tell me all about it.
So somebody calls our office, they might be in crisis. They may not be in crisis. They might be calling because they fled a domestic violence situation and they're wondering what resources are here. So it is really case by case. But first and foremost, one of our first questions is, are you safe right now? And sometimes the answer is no, I'm not. I'm hiding in a closet. Or he's out in the car and I know he's going to be really mad when he comes in. So we talk about, do you want to call 911? Do you want us to call 911? So there's that one option. And others might be where the abuse happened last night, or it's never happened before and this was the first time and I can't believe this is it. Or it could be that we've been married 50 years and I've had it with the domestic violence. So it's really case by case. But first and foremost is, are you safe? Do you have a place to stay that is safe? Children, are you working? Where does he work? We want to know if he has access. Does he have access to weapons? Does he know that you're reaching out for help? Bank accounts. Do you have a joint account, separate account? So it's really case by case, but typically they come in for an intake, and an intake is just basic information that the state requires that we ask. And it's more of conversation than checking the boxes of you have this, you have this, you have this. We keep very minimal information in our files in the event that they're subpoenaed. So we get the name and address. We have one form, I think. We don't talk to anybody relating to their case without a release of information. And it's got to be pretty specific. Somebody gives me permission to talk to Chehalis Police Department, it's pretty specific about what I'm going to talk. We're not going to talk about the color of the shoes and the shoelaces. I mean, it's specific to the case. We have a form that's called In the Event of My Death. And this is a sobering form where we remind our clients that in the event you mysteriously end up dead or missing, we are going to keep your confidentiality confidential unless you sign this form, because we give the statistics of how many people are affected by domestic violence. And if you give us permission to talk to law enforcement, the prosecutors, maybe a family member, then we can tell them more information of our concerns to hopefully gain a charge and a conviction. That form usually upsets people.
Understandably, but it is important.
It's very important, yes. Mm-hmm. So the intake is more of a conversation versus checking the boxes.
Yeah.
And I think the more experience you have as an advocate, the better you are at it. If we have new advocates, we have the new advocates sit in with more experienced advocates to learn different styles and
approaches,
yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if we have somebody that comes in and doesn't necessarily screen in. We don't shoot them out the door. We hook them into other possible resources in the community, or maybe closer to their area where they may live. So it just really depends on, so individualized. That's how it's always a different day.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
When you're helping someone, is there a requirement for being clean of drug-free, or at least sober in that moment? What is the situation with that?
So if somebody comes into our shelter, we ask that they do not use alcohol or any substance while in the shelter. Sometimes during the intake, they may disclose that they have a chemical dependency issue. And so we address that and hook them into resources. We want them to address the chemical dependency, and then we can talk about shelter. I can say in all of the years I've been doing this, there may have been a total of 4 or 5 times we've had to ask somebody to leave because they've broken that rule. But we understand it's a coping mechanism, and sometimes they become addicted because their partner forced them to, you know, either drink or take drugs.
Yeah.
So we try to do it so that everybody in our shelter can be safe. Try to find them resources for dependency issues. But no, drugs and alcohol are not allowed in the shelter.
So while someone doesn't necessarily have to be clean coming in, they need to at least be sober for the intake. Is that right?
Correct.
And then you continue by not using while
in the shelter.
Be receiving services.
Correct.
Okay. That's important to clarify your people. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, how can people get involved? Do y'all have, are y'all hiring? People can volunteer?
So we are currently not hiring.
We're
worried about staying open, right?
Sure, sure.
In fact, we've been on a kind of a hiring hold for quite some time. We could use double the staff that we have.
So definitely taking volunteers.
So we aren't taking volunteers at this time. We have people that want to volunteer, but it takes a dedicated staff to just do the volunteers. We haven't gotten to a place
yet.
To training them, to overseeing what they're, because there's so many different caveats with domestic violence. Like, are you married? Do you have children? Are they on the birth certificate? I'm a big believer it takes an advocate 2 years of being here full time before they can go out on their own confidently, knowing that they're not going to give bad advice or steer somebody in the wrong direction. So my hope is that at some point we'll get a decent amount of funding where we can build up our volunteer pool and have volunteers that go to events, maybe sit in court to help streamline the cases. When we go to courts on Mondays, we typically have on average about 25 clients with protection orders. So it's an all-day, 3-day person ordeal. So volunteers, not yet, but if we get more funding, definitely.
And also volunteers would also need to learn how to deal with situations. Like, what if you have someone who comes in to harass because they think there's someone here that they're after.
Right. You have to, and just the adrenaline and having a day full of adrenaline and then going home to sleep at night is, sometimes this work is very triggering for people who come into work here or volunteer, and it becomes more triggering than they initially thought. I would say probably at least once a month, we go home early or we're on some sort of safety plan because we have had some threats or veiled threats at our office or towards advocates or staff.
Oh my goodness. That's scary.
Yes, it is. We had one time a perpetrator follow an advocate home. So, I mean, we just have to be really aware of our surroundings all the time.
For sure. Have y'all yet had to deal with ICE?
We've had clients who've had to deal with ICE, yes. I don't know if you know that Lewis County just became an unsanctuary county.
I did not know that.
They have a strong Proud Boys presence here. So we've always put on Dia la Independencia. We're not putting that on this year. It's an event in September. It's open to the public. And we usually have about 400 participants. We're not having it this year because, you know, I think it was might have been 2019. We had concerns about raids. I think this was after the Trump election. We were worried about right before COVID. And we were talking about, what are we going to do if they come to the event? We thought we're just going to provide one big human chain circle around people, but not putting people in harm's way. We do a lot of work with immigrants, working on their status. And we work a lot with Northwest Immigrant Rights Project. We've had one husband who was deported. The neighbors overheard this couple fighting, and she said it wasn't a physical fight, but they took him, and she didn't have the truck keys. They don't know where he was. Two little kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's scary.
It's very scary.
What kind of trainings do y'all provide?
We haven't provided any training since COVID.
Oh, really?
We haven't. I mean, we've gone to different agencies who've asked for specific training to their staff, but trainings, you mean to the public?
Yeah.
Well, we have Darkness to Light. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No, I haven't.
So Darkness to Light is how to respond if somebody has disclosed that they've been sexually assaulted. To Holy Matters, we have that in English and in Spanish. Trying to think of what other... We could ask to speak at different businesses or different social events. And we typically give an overview and then get questions like, what do you do if? But we haven't really put on any specific trainings. We've spoken to Centralia Police Department a couple of times.
Are y'all mandated reporters?
We're mandated reporters, correct.
Can you explain a little bit more about the specifics around that?
So if we know of a child who's being abused or neglected, we're mandated to call CPS. If officials haven't already been notified.
If they have not already been notified. That's a key point.
I mean, if we don't know anybody's been notified, do we definitely need to make a CPS referral? But I don't really want to. We have not a great response from CPS here. We have CPS who still take women or threaten women. If you don't leave him, we're going to take your children away.
Wow.
Not following the protocol. So
there, I feel like it's important to clarify about that and warn people about navigating CPS and mandated reporting. I have myself been in a situation where CPS was already involved. It was something that happened several years ago. It's all been over with. And then, here we are again. Unnecessarily, someone called. Unnecessarily, this is being reopened back up again. Why am I being put through this? just because I mentioned a thing happened a long time ago, but it was already dealt with. And it's a lot of the time it's about the mandated reporter's judgment themselves, their call. And some people adhere to the letter of the law. Some people are understanding. And then you have, depends on who you get at CPS. It's a mixed bag, right? And so...
So if law enforcement's been involved, like at a DB call, and they've been told the same thing that the client has told us, law enforcement is that they have the jurisdiction to remove a child, right? Hospitals, medical staff, and law enforcement. So if law enforcement saw this and didn't intervene,
there's nobody else that can advocate then.
I mean, if the woman's doing what she can to protect her children, like we're going with that.
Right.
We're not calling to make it punitive for her.
Sure.
Unless, of course, it's just as egregious, like sexual.
Again, using your best judgment. You have to use your best judgment, and you want to err on the side of caution, but also make sure that you're not causing undue hardships and difficulties as well.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I know. Thank you for trying to engage that question with me. It's just a really important question.
It really is upsetting to me. We had a family years ago here, maybe when I first started, whose child was put into CPS care. CPS put the child in protective custody. That's the word I'm looking for, protective custody.
Mm-hmm.
And the child was put in a motel or a hotel in Vancouver, had to share a room with another kid, and the chaperones were in the hallways during the nighttime. That's where we're at. Like, that can't be better than being with a parent.
Right. I think that there's a lot of corruption.
Well, and there's a protocol. DSHS wrote a protocol for, I did do a training to the CPS workers, actually, about this protocol.
Yeah.
If children are involved in domestic violence,
mm-hmm.
what you're supposed to be doing. None of them had ever heard of the protocol.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Their training is sorely lacking at CPS.
I think they have a hard time retaining employees, too.
It's hard work.
It's hard work, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
The stuff they must see and hear has got to be horrible.
Is there anything else you would like to share?
What could I like to share is, if you see somebody that you think is maybe being abused in public, say something, speak out, call the police. Because a lot of times I think people want to just mind their own business, or they're concerned, but they don't know what to do. And if an abuser is treating his victim in public like that, the way he treats her in private is a lot more dangerous, I would guess I'd say. So if you see something, say something, try to intervene. Not maybe intervene physically, but, hey, are you okay? Do you need me to call the police? Ask the victim questions. I do that all the time. It drives my husband crazy when we go places. But it's surprising about how many times people say, yes, I need some help. I think that's really important for people to know, because, again, I think most people are good and most people want to help and most people want people to thrive. Just pay closer attention and don't be afraid to intervene on a safe level. I guess that's, and send us your money with lots of commas, please.
Well, thank you so much, Christine, for your time. I appreciate you very much, and I appreciate the work that you're doing.
Hey, thank you for asking me.
Yeah. We want to make sure that everybody knows that you're here in Lewis County for them.
Correct. We are. Free and confidential.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you are experiencing domestic violence or sexual assault and need help, or if you would like to support this important organization, you can contact Chris and her team by visiting www.hopeallianclc.org or by calling 360-748-6601. That's it for today's resource report produced by Pathways to Agency. At Pathways to Agency, we are driven by the belief that everyone should have the tools and support to achieve their goals and thrive in their communities. Our mission is to bridge the gaps in understanding, accessibility, and trust by connecting individuals to resources and sharing information and processes that can lead to personal and community growth. Resource Report offers information about existing and emerging nonprofits and resource organizations. Find out more at pathwaystoagency.org. From there, you can follow the link to our podcast archive and listen to any episode anytime. And check out our YouTube channel. We'd love to hear what you think in the comments. Chaos Radio is not responsible or liable for any views or opinions expressed in the interviews conducted by Resource Report. Till next time, and thanks for listening.